All right, here we go on a Friday, a red Friday in Kansas City. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you here on Cody and Gold. Hope everybody's having a good start to the day. The weekend right around the corner, and in a couple hours, we'll kick off the weekend right with a little fan club Friday. And Carrington's going to stop by. It's been a while since we had CDOT on the show. CDOT's going to stop by in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll see what's up with him. We haven't talked to him in a while. Get his thoughts, obviously, on the Chiefs and just where things are at. His alma mater, or not his alma mater, but his college team he roots for. Big game against Auburn. So we got a lot to get into. We'll see that a little bit later on. What do we know the drink of choice today?
Yeah, it'd be a dirty Shirley.
Okay.
We're going to make it nice and simple. Feel like sometimes it's like, hey, I know I'm an adult, but I want kid flavors. And yeah, Carrington is definitively that person. So yeah, just a Shirley Temple, but alcoholic.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like that.
So that's what we're going with today.
There's nothing wrong with that. That works for me too.
That'll, you know, cruise you into the weekend. No complaints, right?
That is perfectly fine. Did you bring the cherry, the little maraschino cherries? As well?
I didn't. I didn't have any dirty Shirley Temple. I didn't have any standard maraschino cherries. I'm like, I'm not going to Target or Walmart or whatever just for maraschino cherries.
We need some maraschino cherries. Yeah.
Well, let's see if he can pick some up on his way in, you know?
I doubt that's happening. I doubt that's happening. Although that might be something where he feels like he has to have for the drink to work.
Close by.
There's Hy-Vee, there's a Target, there's quite a few nearby. So that's coming up a little bit later on in the day. Also, 1 hour from now, we'll check in with Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor over at SI on Chiefs, get his reaction to something we're going to start the show with today, which was the news, surprising news in the afternoon, which was that Juju Smith-Schuster popped up on the old injury report.
Didn't love that.
With a hamstring issue. We don't know for sure his availability. We'll find out more today, obviously, but when you're a veteran, it's a Thursday, and all of a sudden you have a hamstring injury that flares up. You don't like that, for the short term. But also, man, this is part of my concern about the wide receiver room moving forward. He had a great game against the Saints. He deserves all the credit for that. And I think he's capable of having multiple great games throughout this season. But his track record throughout his career has shown he is not going to be available every week. That's just the reality of his career. It's not trying to take a shot on him, but like that's just where we have seen his career go. And you cannot count on him when you also have an aging tight end that all of them can have the workload that might be required right now with this current offense. Not that they can't produce, that they can't stay healthy and produce and still be ready come playoff time. And the latest news with Juju and the hamstring injury to me is more proof of that, that they need to go out and get a wide receiver before the trade deadline. That to me just provides me more and more ammo to go and do that.
I mean, this is big. Like, we could take the bigger picture part of this, but we could certainly break this down in a minute about this game in particular, in which all of a sudden your number one wide receiver weapon would be what? What? Seriously, Justin Watson? How does that sound? How does number one wide receiver Justin Watson sound? I'd rather just throw it to Worthy. I've made that very clear.
Worthy, Watson, Hardman, Moore. That's what they have potentially
on
Sunday.
Well, that sounds horrible. And I am not interested. I can't believe that I feel that way, knowing that Juju Smith-Schuster wasn't like making me jump off of the page last week as they were going into a game. But yeah, what you're saying is right. The problem is with Juju Smith-Schuster, and this has been a problem in his career, and like you said, it's not meant to be like a takedown of the man. He can't stay healthy. He's never been able to stay healthy. He was dinged up at times when he was in his stop in between Kansas City and here in New England. It was part of the reason he didn't stay in New England was his inability to stay healthy there. Now, I get it. It's not like he played in no games or anything like that in his career. It's not like he's missed some seasons and all those stuff to go with it. But, I mean, you can't rely on the man. He played in 11 games last year. He played in 5 in his final season in Pittsburgh. He played in 16 games for Kansas City the year he was here. But I mean, it's just, it's asking a lot. They always probably miss less than you think. It's not like but it's always like 1 game, 2 games, 3 games. And if you don't have any backup at wide receiver to cover for him, then you have to. If they had Hollywood Brown or they had Rashee Rice, if they had one or the other, it doesn't really matter which, well, then I wouldn't care, right? I wouldn't care that Juju Smith-Schuster misses a game here or there.
Right
fine.
Now, they're counting on him.
But he's the number one wide receiver, so it matters.
Yeah, they're counting on him. We saw his role that he had against the Saints. Now, if we go back and we watch the Saints game, it was pretty evident for whatever reason the Saints, whether it was focusing on Travis or otherwise, I mean, Juju was wide open throughout the game. I mean, the one contested catch that he needed to make, unfortunately, he didn't, right? Like, he was just wide open. Call it scheme, whatever it may be. And so that's the question for them on Sunday, obviously, is who could that be? Now, he's not officially ruled out yet. We're going to find out later on today. If he's limited in practice, if he doesn't practice, is he going to have a questionable designation over the weekend? All that, I don't think he's been ruled out yet from anything we've seen or heard. We'll ask Josh Briscoe about it at 11 o'clock.
And he probably won't make that designation.
No, he'll probably be questionable.
About, yeah.
You know, if he's ruled out by 1 o'clock, that tells you it's not just a minor tweak of a hammy, in my opinion. That tells me, like, we got to be concerned. Is he available the following week?
Is this one of those things where, even if he does play, you've seen enough where he's on the injury report. The next team that trades for a wide receiver needs to be, like, they need to jump on it now before if Deontay Johnson's gone, and then all of a sudden their options are even more limited.
I don't think it's like, oh my gosh, they got to go trade for someone tomorrow kind of thing. It's just,
I am leaning that way. Why are we wasting games? They need a wide receiver. We all know they need one.
Yeah, I mean,
why are we waiting 2 weeks?
Because they have see what the market, we on the outside sometimes, like, go trade for the guy now. Now, Amari Cooper was available now. What we don't know is Deontay Johnson actually available now? Is Darius Slayton actually available now? Like, this isn't, I'm not saying you, Cody, but like, this isn't Madden where I can just hop on the game and be like, I want to make the trade now. Accept the damn trade. Like, the Panthers may not be willing to trade Deontay Johnson yet, even though eventually we all think they will.
I don't know why they wouldn't be.
Darius Slayton, the Giants may not be willing to trade him yet. They might in 3 weeks. That's my response to that, where it's like, I'm here, you go get somebody. But the name or two that we want, or maybe the Chiefs are interested in, truly may not be available, even if we think they will by November 5th.
Like, some of this is like, I understand, like, there are times in which you can wait because there isn't a rush to do this. We talk about with the Royals when they're either going to trade somebody or trade for somebody. Baseball's a long-ass season. There's another 70 games on the back load of that trade deadline. Dude, you know you need a wide receiver. Like, there's no mystery in this.
Mm-hmm.
And look, Bob was reporting that the Chiefs at least tried to call the Raiders and say, Devontae available? They were like, yeah, not for you.
Wait, is this the Chiefs? Yeah, hang up.
Sorry.
Sounds like they called the wrong team.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I get it. They probably are making those calls. But this is one of those where the way you were talking about with you would have given up the third for Amari Cooper. The position you're in would make me pay the premium for calling early. If they're saying, well, we want an extra pick swap or we want an extra six, fine. It's all yours, man. We're desperate and you know it. We don't have to hide that fact. I understand it's a balancing game, but this is not a mystery. You can't call a team and convince them right now. You'd be like, well, we don't really need Darius Slayton, you know? We're just like calling to see what's up. You'd be like, you're a liar, and you're full of it, and we all know you're full of it. Juju might not even be available for you this Sunday. Now, look, they don't have to make the trade today. Not like if they traded for someone today, he's playing Sunday.
There's one guy on the street, Cody, that's available right now. There's
Dude,
one
Juju can't
guy.
Play on Sunday. Somehow MVS will
there's
sign with
There's one guy
team.
That's just waiting for that phone call. It's your guy, Marquez.
It is really hard, though, to say they need to go get one and they need to go get one now because of what they did last year. But to the point that's there, if you sit on it and all of a sudden we see a different team goes and they get Deontay Johnson and you miss your chance because you want to see how it goes, or all of a sudden a team is willing to pay that premium, how all in are you on the three-peat? Because I think if you're all the way in that you need to get it done and you feel like you have to, you should be willing to pay maybe more than what it costs potentially to get it done if it matters to you that much.
Get it done now.
Waiting and just seeing what happens.
Now, maybe the argument is they don't have to get it done now because they've given themselves a buffer. You get to 6-0, you've given yourself a buffer. You can lose a game. You can drop one. It doesn't stop you from doing the things you need to do. Because if they were 3-2, I actually think the receiver would already be on this roster.
I think there's a chance that's true.
I don't even think they'd be sitting around and waiting and dragging their feet. I think they'd already have a wide receiver on the roster they had traded for.
I think there's probably some truth to that. Some of it also could depend on how do they look on Sunday. I mean, is this offense absolutely brutal on Sunday? Is it clear that nobody can get open when they're relying on Watson, Sky Moore, and Mecole Hardman? You know, I guess Xavier Worthy as well. Like, if that happens, that could also swing it. I never want to hear the word nobody wants to be patient or anything. I get it. The deadline is November 5th. We all, I think, universally agree they need a wide receiver, at least on this show we do. Although I had somebody yesterday on social media say that they don't need a trade for a wide receiver because a fourth round pick could be the next Trey Smith. Look, we can play that game all day long. Whereas overvaluing draft picks, trading a conditional fourth or fifth round pick is not going to stop them from being competitive for the next 3 years. Okay.
No.
They're not trading their first or second round.
They're not burning their long-term future by giving up a fourth for Darius.
Correct. They also have an extra third this year from the Snead trade. So I don't think if your reason for not making the trade is strictly, I want my fourth round pick. It's going to be a hard time for us to agree on that being the reason.
The only argument I would listen for that is that Brett Veach's the fourth round pick is more valuable in Brett Veach's hands than just about every other GM in the league, and that's fine. But he'll have other ones.
Yeah,
he'll have other picks, and also their recent hit rate allows them even more flexibility in releasing draft capital into the league because they don't need to hit on 50% of their draft picks this year. They've been hitting it an 80% clip for 3 seasons, and if you're going to hit it that high of a rate, you don't need to hit on as many of your draft picks for the next couple of years. Well, I'd like it if they did, but you don't have to.
That was why I think the frustrating thing is seeing if you wanted to get Amari Cooper is that he went for something that you have two of. It's not like you're giving up your only third round pick.
Yeah.
You got the bonus one. Keep Tennessee's because your pick's going to be better in the third round with Tennessee's than yours. Give up your third round pick and go and get Amari Cooper.
Yeah, so I think we've all acknowledged we would have made that trade for Cooper. It's pretty clear that the Chiefs were just simply not interested in Amari Cooper. Now, you and I said yesterday, Cody, I would love to deep down have a conversation and find out truly from Brett Veach, why weren't they maybe interested? But I think it's clear they weren't interested. It's not like, they were calling around and they just got sniped by the Bills. I don't think that's what happened here. They weren't interested in Amari Cooper. Why? We've speculated. Is it age? Is it the drops? Is it the compensate? Whatever. They weren't interested in Amari Cooper, even though all three of us would have made the trade. We'll see what the next couple weeks bring. I think also what happened with people are do it now. The deadline got extended because the thought was, hey, there'll be more trades closer then because teams will know if they're out of it even more by November 5th versus a week earlier. I would have pushed the trade deadline back even another week if you want to know the truth. But they pushed it back 1 week. It's progress. Okay. Because Amari Cooper and Davante Adams got traded so early, I don't think this is the norm. If Amari Cooper and Davante Adams didn't get traded, none of us would be saying, oh my gosh, they got to go make a trade right now.
Right.
It's because two guys got traded earlier than we thought. I don't think that's the new norm for the trade deadline. Unique circumstance with the Jets, I think we would agree.
Yeah.
The Davante Adams thing is, one, he has been dealing with a hamstring injury because he knew he was going to get traded. And we know Aaron Rodgers was not going to let the Jets continue to play without Davante Adams on their team. So that's not a normal year. In a normal year, Davante Adams probably doesn't get traded for another couple weeks.
Maybe. And realistically, that might be the case. But also, markets change. And in the individual years, you kind of do have to go with the market. On the other side of the field, though, I'll say one of the reasons, because we're going to talk more about how this affects the matchup and what they do. I don't think people realize that the San Francisco 49ers, despite being a dominant defensive team for a number of years, give up a ton of points this year. They also score a ton of points. But the reason why I'm still confident the Chiefs can, and I do think inevitably will win this game on Sunday, is we're not giving one player enough credit. Chris Jones, we used to call him Aaron Donald Light, right? It was we talked about Aaron Donald, he was Patrick Mahomes, and everyone else didn't deserve to be in the conversation. They were just a half step, a full step, whatever, below that. That is Chris Jones now. He is a one-man wrecking crew. It does not matter what statistic you look at. Win rate, double team win rate, double team, it doesn't matter. Look at the statistical breakdown done by Pro Football Focus this past weekend and look for the little dot that is 4,000 miles away from everyone else in quality of pass rush. He is a completely dominant force. I went back through and watched some of the stuff because I was has he been Aaron Donald good? Because we remember what it was to watch Aaron Donald in his prime. Gold, you remember to be my God, how does anyone even get the ball snapped? It's impossible. Oh, no, not the issue at all. I watched Chris Jones, and that's exactly who he looks like. He looks like prime Aaron Donald right now. This was Steve Spagnuolo. He spoke to the media yesterday. This is what he had to say about him.
Well, you saw it last week. The Saints, I think, paid a lot of attention to Chris and the way they protected in the pass game. That's going to happen a lot. It doesn't happen all the time. Somehow we got to find a way for Chris to win a couple of those even when he's doubled. And when that does happen and they do choose to put a lot of attention on one guy, somewhere in there, somebody's got a one-on-one. Somebody's got to step up and win. And we've had a little bit of that. We'd like to have a little bit more of that. But It's good. I think the other 10 guys on the field appreciate the fact that we have a guy like Chris that demands that kind of attention and possibly can open up something for somebody else.
Not just the other defensive linemen. The other 10 men on the field are appreciative of how much attention Chris Jones takes.
No doubt. Their job gets a lot easier. And Chris Jones is having a really, really good year. We know he's going to end up being a Hall of Famer one day. The only question will be is if he's a first ballot Hall of Famer or not. And if he has another ring or two to his resume, that could lock up a first ballot Hall of Fame chance for Chris Jones one day. So I don't want to downplay what you're saying. I hear you. The stats don't show how dominant he has been. I'll push back on he looks just like Aaron Donald in his prime, because at some point, some stats do matter.
Assuming the stat you're mentioning.
Yeah, and also what Spags said there in that clip that we're not bringing up, which is Spags said at some point, you know, we like him. He needs to win one of those double teams. How many times did we see, your comparison, prime Aaron Donald win the double teams?
I think
that
he
has to happen.
Some of those.
That has
to happen
more.
To win more.
So Chris, this makes me seem like I'm hating on Chris Jones. Not
it
at
does.
All. Chris,
you sound like a hater.
Chris Jones is incredible. I just told you he's going to be a Hall of Famer, and he's playing at that level. I disagree with the notion, though, that he's playing just like Aaron Donald did in his prime. That's all I'm going to push back on, because at some point the numbers do matter. I mean, the dude had 20 and a half sacks in three straight 12 and a half sack seasons or more. Chris Jones this year has three. He had 10 and a half last year. He also had a 3-year stretch in his prime of 9, 7.5, and 9. So I'll just push like on the direct comparison. He's dominant
at that age, fine, but his prime might be now, 15.5, 10.5, and he's on pace for 11 sacks this season.
Yeah,
his three best stretches now.
Could be.
Not the previous stretch would have been. Yeah, I mean his three best stretches currently happening. He could be a double digit sack guy three straight seasons. I just think you look at
Donald did it for five straight, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. But like, I'm also not saying his 5-year run is greater than Aaron Donald's 5-year run. I'm telling you, this year's version of Chris Jones is playing like the best years of Aaron Donald. He is playing like
the single best interior
defensive lineman separate from the rest of the league.
Oh, he's the best interior. Nope, I'm not. He's the best interior. So, but that's what I'm saying. It's not the same. Being the best interior defensive lineman in 2024 doesn't mean it's the same as being the best interior defensive lineman in 2018, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You're saying like, if you're the best at that in this, at any year, if you're the best at that position, it means you're doing the exact same thing as Aaron Donald. I'm saying I don't agree with that notion.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's playing at that level. I understand you're going to say in his best years he had 20 sacks. We don't think Chris Jones is getting to 20 sacks this year.
I don't. Pretty special.
I also think that it wasn't like it always is and always will be. No one is an island. He is an island and he's performing at that level. He is beating teams at that level. Then it's had better complimentary pass rushers to go with that with Aaron Donald, where you couldn't just ignore him all the time. Now, look, he's double teamed right now at a rate. Aaron Donald used to get double teamed, which is stupid in its own things. I like this. It just said Alex is about to get some tweets from Chris Jones. He's about to tell you to shut up, too. Is that what he told CDOT once? Did he say, shut up, bitch?
I think so.
On Twitter.
Yeah, I think so. Look, if it's being a hater by saying that he's going to the Hall of Fame, he's the best interior defensive lineman, but he's still not at the level Donald was for 2 years, I guess I'm a hater then. You know, I mean, I guess we
that does sound haterish.
That's pretty crazy to me to think that would be actually hating on somebody. I told you, my only disagreement with you is that I don't believe you take Aaron Donald's best year. I don't believe Chris Jones is playing at that level. That's all I'm saying. He's the best defensive lineman in football right now. That's a fact. But again, we're talking historical stuff. That's like me, you know, that's the same way we talk about whether it's quarterbacks or tight ends. Like, hey, you know, Sam Laporta had a great year last year. It doesn't mean he's playing at the same level that Travis Kelce and Gronk played in their entire career. That's the difference that I'm talking about here. Sam Laporta is great. Chris Jones is great. You get the comp I'm trying to get at is like,
sure,
you
I think
be,
that's too big of a stretch it's one rookie in a single year, but yes.
You know what I mean? Like there's a difference, you know, where it's not just because you're the best at your position for 1 year. Or 2 years doesn't mean that you're doing. Aaron Donald, we all agree, is a generational player.
He's one of the single greatest. He's probably one of the 10 best NFL players of all time.
Yeah, and Chris Jones is awesome. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. That already puts you in special company. I don't think Chris Jones is going to go down as the third or fourth best defensive lineman in NFL history. That's all I'm trying to say.
You're taking it. Yeah, and that's what you're saying because you're trying to make it seem like not an insult, which is fair. I don't think you're insulting Chris Jones. The difference is I'm just talking about play in an individual season. I am not at the end of this going to try to comp their careers.
Yeah, and we just disagree on it. I mean, I don't know how we can say an individual season he's playing at Aaron Donald's level when Aaron Donald had 20 and a half sacks.
No, I understand the ones. I know you're going to put the numbers in there, but you're trying to make it about the career. Like at the end of this, you're not going to make Chris Jones sound like he's one of the five best defensive linemen of all time. I am just saying the level he is playing at right now mirrors that of Aaron Donald's greatest play.
I know, and we just disagree because
yeah, I understand.
20 and a half sacks was Aaron Donald's best year, so I don't know how he's playing at that level.
I don't know if it's like this probably goes back to like the championships or all those things. If you got 14 and a half, is that close enough for you?
No.
He's on pace for 11. So like that,
you're
like,
trying,
but there's like a percentage difference between the level of dominant and impact he has.
Finishing seven sacks off the pace of Aaron Donald is not the same season. No,
Cody, you're saying Gold is taking the best season that Aaron Donald's ever had, not just this is what Aaron Donald's. If Aaron Donald averaged in his career 16 and a half sacks, and Chris Jones is on pace to get that number. Yes. That's what you're trying to go
for. At the end of the season, I do not think that Chris Jones' season will be better than that one individual season of Aaron Donald. I'm just plucking out the 10 years that Aaron Donald was the most dominant defensive force in the NFL. That's the level Chris Jones is playing at. And look, it's splitting hairs probably at some difference because you're trying to, you know, like, it's easy to make it about Aaron Donald's entire career or the 120 and a half game season. But the attention he is given by defenses right now does very much statistically look that way. And because of that, Chris Jones is one of the most dominant players in the league. It's also the entire fundamental reason why they are one of the league's best defenses again. Take everything else out of it. Linebacker play, safety play, corner play, all of that is because Chris Jones has to take up 80% of your defensive meeting every single week trying to figure out how you're just going to stop one man from destroying the game.
Don't disagree with that at all. 100%. That part right there, absolutely, that's what we're seeing. That is all very true. No disagreement on that.
We're good. Then it sounds like we're agreeing that he is Aaron Donald. I know. It's fine. We don't have to agree on the wording of it when we agree on the results.
Yeah, no doubt.
Someone says, just buy a gold. Fine, gold. Just buy an Aaron Donald jersey. Jeez, we get it. Yeah, why do you love Aaron Donald so much?
I don't.
You take care of your family? He is one of the most generational players. I understand. I'm just talking about an individual year. Back to where we are on the other side. I just want to say, before we talk about this game last night, the Guardians-Yankees game
was amazing.
But I want to say something real quick, because if you wasted your evening, and I don't care who you are, I don't know if it was you, Alex, I don't know who it was, if you wasted your evening watching Saints-Broncos instead of that Yankees-Guardians game, shame on you. Shame on you.
What about watching both?
Shame on you. That game was 15 times the game that game was. That game stunk. That was an all-time playoff game where people were slugging it back and forth for all-time moments. If you wasted your time watching that Broncos game, why? I know football's the most popular sport in the U.S., but why? Why do you hate yourself so much that you can't enjoy a sport for an incredible moment rather than watching the Saints?
I watched both. And once I knew the Broncos minus 2.5 was in the bag and there was nothing to sweat
anymore.
In the bag
after like the first quarter.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, it was over pretty quick. The Saints are terrible and they're beat up, and the Broncos beat them up from the very beginning, to your point, and they easily covered. So I watched the Broncos game, a decent chunk of that last night, and then I flipped over and watched the Guardians just in time to catch the game-tying home run in the ninth, and of course the walk-off. And I must say, Tom Hamilton, who's the voice of the Guardians there in Cleveland, I mean, just a sensational call.
Here it comes. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left. There she goes! How about that? A walk-off two-run home run to the bleachers in left by David Fry. And the magical 2024 season is not done by any means.
Such a good call. David Fry did get the walk-off there. Tom Hamilton on the call. Guardians Radio.
Give some like chills a little bit.
Oh,
know?
But his voice is great. His voice is great. Awesome. He's sensational. His call of the ninth inning home run from Noel was, I almost like that one better.
Yeah,
now, did
I
you catch
too.
The Spanish broadcast of the Noel home run?
I did not catch
run?
The Spanish broadcast.
Oh, it was okay. So Noel is the last name of the player who got the home run in the ninth inning. That's just the context that is necessary. It's why you'll understand why this is a great call.
Feliz Navidad! ¡Feliz Navidad! ¡Con Casey Noel! ¡Acaba de empatar el encuentro la Navidad en octubre! ¡Qué bárbaro! ¡Qué monstruo!
It goes on from there, too. But
just yelling Feliz Navidad is so good.
It's great. That's just one of those where, like obviously, you can make the Noel comparison joke in English, but it is so much better when you say it in Spanish for that instance in that circumstance. And that was, and look, earlier in the game, Stanton, of course, there's the back-to-back home runs. Like, it was a really, really high-level playoff game, and it keeps the Guardians season alive. I know they couldn't have been eliminated last night, but essentially we know the math, you know, like I think it's 80% of the time if you fall down 3-1 in an NLCS or ALCS, you're going to get eliminated. That's the issue for the Mets right now against the Dodgers on the NL side. But now we got a series, you know. I'll give credit to the Guardians. I thought they were toast once they got down early and Stanton hit the home run.
Yeah, that game was just, baseball's at its best when it's just slugging it back and forth, regaining the lead from each other until one final walk-off home run does it. Yeah. Like, that's what it is. It's just this moment of, and Fry's got two massive home runs for them in this postseason. He's not even starting these games. He's just rolling up off the bench to club two-run home runs to win it. That game was incredible. Best one of the postseason.
Yeah, not even close, really. I mean, it was, that's it. You know, we remember the AL wildcard game in 14. Who knows how the season ends for the Guardians? That game in particular, that's the game they're talking about in Cleveland for the rest of their lives. And that's how special last night was. Up next, though, let's talk about the AFC West, get right back in the NFL in particular. Just what's the timeline for some of these other teams? And we'll talk a little bit more about what Felix could actually do for the Chiefs.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
On Sunday. Just getting started here on a Friday. Coming up in 25 minutes, we'll check in with Josh Briscoe, our contributor for the Chiefs over at SI on Chiefs. We'll obviously ask him about the Juju Smith-Schuster hamstring injury, both for this Sunday and, yeah, the long-term ramifications, perhaps. Does that change his thinking on potential trade options? We'll also discuss how he sees this backfield working. We know the window for practice has been opened up for Clyde, so what do they do with four running backs being available at that point? There's some decisions to be made. So that's coming up in just a little bit. We were joking about the Thursday night game being terrible last night. Yeah, the Broncos got the win. They cruised to victory. The Saints, I understand they're super banged up, but they're also just not a good football team.
I mean, they're starting, like, Spencer Rattler and Bud Meade.
I understand.
So they're just like down and out. Dennis Allen's a bad coach. I've been telling you this forever. Like,
they started out 2-0. The Saints did. Offense, best in the league. Clint Kubiak was getting praised to be another head coach.
All of that went away quickly, didn't it?
Very quickly. And you're right. There's a ton of injuries. Last night was a lot of injuries. The last few weeks, even before they were banged up, they weren't playing well. But anyway, the Broncos cruised. It was never in doubt. It was an ugly football game. The Broncos had lost multiple games in a row. They obviously got back on track. So right now in the AFC West, we know the Chiefs are undefeated. They're minus 1,100 to win the division over at FanDuel. The Chargers are 3-2. The Broncos, of course, have played an extra game last night. They are 4-3, and then the Raiders are 2-4. And so we know one team in Denver has Bo Nix, a rookie quarterback. The Chargers have an experienced quarterback in Herbert, who I think next year is the year where maybe they take the step forward. I feel like you watch the Chargers, and with Harbaugh, you can already tell they're
disciplined,
a more physical, disciplined football team, well-coached football team at the very least. And then the Raiders, I mean, come on now. So if I'm asking you who has a better chance and what's the timeline for any of these teams to actually compete in the division? And the Chargers are at the top of the list, and that's still next year, right?
So the Raiders, at least 5 years. I don't I mean, I'll talk to you in like half a decade. I guess if for some reason they end up as the number one overall pick, take Shedeur Sanders and it works, maybe sooner, but at least 5 years at this point. On paper, as they sit, a million years away, a million miles away. Denver, somehow maybe longer. And the only reason I'm saying that is, anyone else watch the Denver Broncos offense and understand they're essentially just running a high school offense? They do not trust their quarterback to throw. Does anyone believe in an offense in which they do not allow their quarterback to throw the football? I've seen teams win for a little while that way. Eventually, it will always catch up on you. He's more dangerous as a mediocre runner than as a passer. So do I think that Bo Nix is going to threaten this team anytime in the next 5 years? No, not really. Which means I got to think it's the quarterback after Bo Nix if I think that Denver's actually going to do it. The Chargers are the only team that's close. They're the only team that I think even has a chance to compete for this division in the next 5 years. And that's because of, yeah, Harbaugh and Justin Herbert. They have one good quarterback at least. Maybe he's not a superstar like we thought after year one, but he's talented. He can make every throw, and Harbaugh's a good coach. So they put enough weapons around him. Yeah, I think the Chargers could compete.
In the division, I'm with you on the timeline. And yeah, I think the Chargers will be a very popular pick amongst national media, even more than what we have seen in prior years. This next summer, there will be a lot of people predicting, even if the Chiefs three-peat, by the way, next summer people will be picking the Chargers to win the division for the first time in, at that point, what, 9 years? Because...
Well, some people have been picking them for a while.
That's what I said. It's been happening, but not this past year, but it was definitely a trend for a while. I think you would see that again with the Chargers because they'd say, oh, it's year two of Harbaugh. They got to get some more talent in there. And so that'll be more understandable next year, at least. I'll say for this year, not competing in the division, but playoff-wise...
Division's better than I thought.
Here's the thing for the Broncos. So they're 4-3. They get the Panthers next week. Now, it's the Broncos. They're still capable of losing that game, but I think they win. 5-3. Then they have the Ravens and the Chiefs and the Falcons. So they go from getting to 5-3 to 5-4 to 5-5 to 5-6. Then they get the Broncos. Then they get the Raiders and the Browns.
Two winnable games.
So they could get to seven wins with games against the Colts, Chargers, Bengals, and Chiefs. And the Chiefs is last week of the season. The Chiefs might be starting Carson Wentz. It's not crazy for the Broncos to go into the last week of the season and have a chance to make a wild card spot. It really isn't.
It's more likely if they find some way to steal one against the Chiefs, Ravens, or Falcons, based on just the math of it. But yeah, it's not out of the question. Look, the division is more competitive than I was anticipating. Do you realize that this stretch through the season right now, there are only two divisions with three teams above 500, and the AFC West is one of them? How about that? The only other one is the best division in football, the NFC North, where all four teams have at least four wins right now in their division. There is not a single other division in football that has three teams above 500, and the AFC West does. That actually does say something a little bit about the competitiveness of it. The Raiders stink, and they're getting bullied a little bit. But the rest of the divisions don't have the strength that this division typically seemingly has. When I think this division is going to be good, it's bad. And when I think everyone's going to be a laughing stock, it's more competitive. The Broncos are a tougher out than I thought they were going to be.
Yeah,
they run the ball really well. Defensively, they are far superior to what they were last year, especially when Sertan is healthy and on the field. And he's got a concussion, so we'd assume he'll be back in a week or two. They're more competitive than I thought. The Chargers are well coached for the first time, so they'll scrap out some wins they shouldn't versus the talent level that they have. Like, if Harbaugh had the talent that the Chargers had 2 years ago, I definitely think that they were a playoff team or a competitive playoff team. They just don't have as much talent.
Yeah, I hear you on the Broncos. They're just kind of like a pain in the ass. Like they're not.
Yeah, that's
push.
It. They're tougher out.
Yeah, you look before the season. We talked about the 6-1 bet for the Chiefs to sweep the AFC West for the first time since 2022.
You're one.
Still feel good. Yeah, 1-0. But I still feel very good about that. Don't you? What if you? Even though we just acknowledged that it's a tougher out than we thought. I still haven't seen anything from knowing that they already beat the Chargers, too. Certainly nothing from the Raiders. And so really the question is if the Broncos get you for one game. Because otherwise, I feel like the Chiefs are still going to sweep the AFC West. The Chargers' schedule is also going for... They play the Cardinals on Monday night, and the Cardinals are just kind of a weird team to figure out.
Kyler Murray's playing well, but they're not really winning, and so I don't know what to think of that.
But then the Chargers... So they have the Cardinals, which is a winnable game. Saints, who we just talked about. Browns, definitely winnable. Titans, winnable.
That's a soft-ass schedule they got.
Then they get the Bengals and Ravens. And the question on will be, how is Cincinnati playing on November 17th? But that should be two tough games back-to-back. along with the Falcons and the Chiefs. So that's where it gets set. The Chargers have a stretch of games against Cincy, Baltimore, Atlanta, Kansas City, and Tampa. That's a hell of a five-game stretch. That's why I actually think the Broncos have the better path to surprise people and go into the last week of the season with like 9 wins and have a chance to get in as the last wild card. More so than the Chargers. The Chargers' last two games are the Patriots and Raiders. But that five-game stretch of Cincy, Baltimore, Atlanta, Kansas City, and Tampa, that's brutal.
That's a tough way to end your season, I'll say. The Chiefs season ends difficult as well. They're in a like 50-50 stretch right now. Then they get in an easier stretch. And then because of the number of games in a row and the competitiveness of those teams, the Chiefs have to finish kind of tough. But that's at least part of it. I heard multiple people talking about one particular player for this coming up on Sunday. Look, Mike Dana didn't practice again yesterday, so I just don't think he's going to play. He hasn't practiced all week, Andy Reid. If you don't practice by Thursday, you're usually done. Steve Spagnuolo, several other members of the Chiefs roster have mentioned Felix Anudike Uzama. He played 26% of the snaps in the lineup last week. He registered 2 tackles and 3 quarterback pressures, including a hit and a hurry. The pressure total matched that of George Karloftis. So he was good in those moments. He was being complimented by Spags in those moments. This is a massive game to prove to me that you got it. Like, you got something. Again, I've never been about rushing the development of Felix Anudike Uzama because they took the rawest damn player in the draft.
Yeah, he's still only like 21 years old or something.
They took the rawest player in the draft. Maybe that was a risky proposition when they did that with Tano Passanio, which is exactly what they did when they took Tano Passanio in the second round years ago. He was an athletic freak, raw as hell. That's essentially what they did with Felix. This is a massive moment to prove that you can do this 50% of the snaps like every other defensive lineman in football. All I'm asking him to be right now is as good as Mike Dana. My sights are not set on turn into Chris Jones now, please. It is just be as good as Mike Dana is on most day. 50% of the time, get some occasional pressures, run into a sack or two if the guy doesn't play, et cetera, et cetera. This feels like a big game for my judgment of Felix Anudike's progression this season.
It definitely is, although I will say, what was it, the Chargers game? We were like, hey, he's going up against 2 backup tackles. Let's see what he can do. He's going to get an increased playing time. And he was fine in that. Basically, he's going to get another 25% of snaps in this game on Sunday. And I think, why are you hearing publicly the coach and Spags and hearing players talk him up? I think they are trying to build up the kid's confidence too. You're hearing a lot of them go out of their way to talk about Felix. I don't think that's just a coincidence. They recognize that they need him on Sunday and they're trying to give him some confidence going into this game.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense. Not a bad idea. Felix, I think watching this year definitely looks better than he did last year in the first 3 games that he played. But yeah, this, you know, it's, is he popping out on the screen? No, I don't know if that's going to happen in this game on Sunday. But I do think the confidence aspect is key. You know, it was one play in the Super Bowl last year that he made. It was the best play he made in his entire career.
It's a huge play.
And it was, at the time, a massive play in that game. The snap increase and getting more reps until you're actually out there, like, it's hard to get better if you're just going to be practicing and not playing in some of these NFL games. And I think that's why we've seen Felix get a little bit better. I know everybody has drastically lower their expectations because of what he's been as a player to this point. I said 21. He's 22 years old. He'll be 23 in January. The fact that he's still super young gives you some hope that there's still more progression left. But yeah, Sunday, when you're going to get an extra 25% of snaps, let's see what you do with those.
Just make a little bit something of them, you know? And this, we just talked about this with Chris Jones. He's going to do a lot of the heavy lifting for you, okay? Your job is to beat one man all day, Felix. You're never going to be asked to do more than that. Beat one person. On those pass rush snaps, when it's 3rd and 9, beat one person.
Yeah, someone on the text line, 913-586-7965, says, don't judge him too hard. He's going up against Trent Williams, the best left tackle in the league. My guess is Karloftis or Chris Jones will be over on the left side with Trent. And Tershawn Warden
it'll be Turk and Felix.
And Felix will be whoever. I don't even know who the right tackle is. I was trying to think of the name. Who the hell is? I don't know who the right tackle is. I don't think they're going to have Felix go up against Trent Williams.
Right, I don't know.
I don't think they're having Felix go up against Trent Williams. I honestly have no clue who the right tackle is in San Francisco. But
I'm guessing Chris Jones will sometimes go against Trent Williams. No, Chris, and sometimes Chris he'll line up will. In the middle. And yeah, sometimes Chris he'll will. Line up in the other
Colton
side.
Colton McKivitz. I don't know. Maybe.
Hmm.
fifth-round pick a couple years ago out of West Virginia.
Never heard of him.
Seems like a guy that you could actually maybe have some success.
Does feel like you should beat a guy named Colton McKivitz.
Versus Trent Williams, future Hall of Famer.
Trent Williams is going to go down as one of the 10 best left tackles of all time. Is that fair to say? Or
yes.
Does seem like
Trent Williams is the real deal. He's been the best left tackle in football for a while.
Colton McKivitz has a... I wanted to look up his Pro Football Focus grade because it's not like you and I have any idea the level of play he's been giving the team. A pretty good grade, actually. 71.6, above average.
He's the 25th tackle.
Although he ranks below average in pass blocking,
yes,
which is what we're talking about here.
Good.
Turns out, like most guys who block for the 49ers, he is better at run blocking.
He's allowed one sack.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, because someone points out Chris going up against the right tackle. You know, I don't doubt where Chris is going to rotate. I'm saying, like, I don't think Felix is going up against Trent Williams much in this game on Sunday. That's all.
I don't think he'll get snaps, but I don't think they're just going to be like, all right, Felix, we got a new assignment for you today. Your job is to just never win. Your job is to go up against Trent Williams and never win.
One of the best left tackles in the league. Good
luck. In fairness, is that the worst strategy? Hear me out for just a minute. You let Felix Anyadike be the guy who rushes against Trent Williams every day.
Oh, okay.
You put Trent Williams on an island, and you're just like, hey, we weren't going to win over there anyway. So let's just take the L.
Put Chris somewhere
else. Who cares?
So you're saying
line
up Chris.
And George Karloftis and Chris Jones line up against literally anyone else on the line not named Trent Williams. Tell me that's the worst plan.
That's what we just got a text on that very thing. It says, let our worst pass rusher go against Williams. This should free up the rest.
It's actually not the worst strategy.
Not a terrible strategy.
You're not winning against Trent Williams all that often. Okay? No one is.
I mean, Chris,
so why put good pass rushers against him?
Yeah, I mean, like Chris, we know he's going to rotate. So I'm talking about George and Felix in this scenario. We know Chris is going to be on the inside. He's going to be on the outside, line up at right against the right tackle, sometimes against left. The interesting thing will be, if Chris solely at any point when he's not inside, if he only goes towards the right tackle, or if he does line up against Trent. Yeah. To your point, we'll see, man.
I just don't hate the plan. Felix, in that case, by the way, I won't judge him based on that. You did your job.
Felix gets a sack against Trent Williams. Cody's going to make a song on Monday.
My God, if he gets a sack. Look, Trent Williams giving him like one sack in the last 10 years. Like, if you, but also, I won't judge him if he doesn't have a good game. If your job is to go against Trent Williams for 60, your job is to lose. That's not, your job isn't to win in that scenario. Your job is to make everyone else's life easier. That's okay. Mm-hmm. I can totally live with that. I'll make no judgments based on that. This just felt like a big game in the swing of his ability.
In 10 minutes, we'll talk more Chiefs football with Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor for SI on Chiefs. We'll ask him about Felix. We'll obviously talk about the Juju Smith-Schuster injury. There was some surprising news, though, in sports. I don't know, 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon yesterday, we were texting about this. It's news in college basketball that Tony Bennett is retiring from Virginia 3 weeks before the season, guys. We all know the story there. Unbelievable two-year stretch.
20 days is their first game.
20 days, yeah. And
from yesterday.
We know the loss, right? The worst NCAA tournament loss. And the very next year, they bounce back and win a title. I mean, that's pretty special.
It's one of the best redemption stories.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's a great sports story, and you give him all the credit in the world to bounce back. That could have been
that was impressive.
Just demoralizing and crushed someone's coaching career, frankly. You know, and you never recover from that. They bounce back. Hell of a coach, boring ass style of basketball. That's a whole nother conversation. At first I was like, oh man, this doesn't sound good. You know, has he got a health problem? I hope not. You know, he's 3 weeks before the season. You know, why would you step away unless maybe you or your family members dealing with something serious? Fortunately, all the reports suggested that no, he's healthy. He's fine. So that's great. It seems as though Jeff Goodman tweeted this out that there is a staff member, an assistant coach that he brought back with him a couple years ago, that he wants to be the next coach after him. And this was his way of giving this coach a one-year role to basically free roll, if you will. Like, hey, go out there and have success, and they'll kind of be forced to hire
job
you.
Tryout,
yeah, like basically, like, hey, if you go out there and you compete in the ACC and you make the tournament and win a game, like, they're probably not firing you.
Yeah, you know, it'd be a real shame if someone had to actually earn their job through the interview process and through ability and talent. Yeah, that'd be just a horrible thing, Tony Bennett.
So, look, I think it's bad for... On one hand, you would say, hey, you're taking care of your guy. That'd be the positive spin. The other spin is, hey, I'm a 19-year-old kid that committed to University of Virginia, that you were going to be my head coach for multiple years. And then 3 weeks before the season, I find out you're not. And yeah, the transfer portal's open back up now, but nobody's going to accept a transfer 20 days before the season, so I'm screwed here for a year. Thank you. That's who I feel bad for. That's pretty crappy.
This is loser behavior by Tony Bennett. Loser behavior. He quit on his team 3 weeks before. Think about how many times he sat in some practice and be like, you got to push yourself. You got to want it. He was full of it the whole time. You should have never listened to the man. This is a coward's way out. Because he wanted his buddy to get hired, he's going to quit 3 weeks before the job to gift it to him for a year? It's loser behavior. I'm sorry. This is loser behavior, and it's bad for the kids. We always have college athletes, and they never treat him that way. They just discard them like used trash.
So he had his presser this morning, and Nicole Auerbach was live tweeting it. One of the things that he said was, quote, I realized I'm no longer the best coach to lead this program in the current environment. If you're going to do it, you got to be all in. If you if you're going to do it half-hearted,
could have realized that 5 months
it's
ago.
Not fair to the university. He said he realized it in a fall break trip with his wife, which would have literally been
true.
Fall break like a week ago.
Yeah, no. What you just said and from the tweet was so predictable. Yesterday, I'm going back to our text thread. All three of us were texting about this. I said, quote,
the name, image, likeness stuff.
I just said, we know how he's going to phrase this tomorrow. And what you just said is, I said, he'll argue he wasn't committed anymore and it would be an injustice to his players to coach if he wasn't all in. What did he just say?
Yeah,
of course, it was so predictable. Of course, that's what he was going to say.
I think he's being honest, though. He's being honest about it.
No, he's not. He knew this for years. He knew this for months. I don't believe people who just quit on this. You know, my kids are 6 and 8. You know what the very first lesson we had to teach them when they started getting into activities was, Drew? That whether you like it or not, if you started this commitment, you're going to see it through. You started the entire offseason. Like, you don't want to do dance anymore. You don't want to play soccer anymore. It's game 4? Tough. You're going to have to finish this season. I'm not forcing you to play soccer the rest of your life. Tony Bennett doesn't have to coach for the rest of his life. The NIL part of the job is done. He's recruited the kids. They're on his team.
I mean,
he has made the commitment to them.
It's never done. I mean, it's never done.
Well, then his assistant coach can start taking
it. But I mean, like, it truly is never done because, well, so look, I'm not
defending. We just saw a football player quit midseason because of NIL. I don't think it's ever done.
It's never done. It's a constant battle of re-recruiting your already existing players and all that. I don't doubt that that's part of his reasoning. My issue, and I agree with you, Cody, is then why did you sign an extension in July?
Correct.
You know, he just signed an extension in July. He would argue that, well, I was helping out my buddy who's on the staff to make sure he could. Okay. But man, it's like, nobody's saying you can't retire. Retire after this year. Say, hey, this is my last year. This is my last year. And that's it.
Correct. Yeah, that's the decision he should have made, because the way that this has panned out is actually kind of interesting. Wisconsin did Bo Ryan did a very similar thing with current coach Greg Gard, did really well. Now he's the coach. Mm-hmm. But he did it in like May, if I remember correctly, or like June. It's like, hey, I'm retiring. I'm done. That gives them enough time to figure out recruiting and all of that stuff. To do it, the timing of it makes absolutely no sense. It is
Bo Ryan, totally I went back to, I remember the story. He retired in middle December of 2015. He retired in the middle of the season.
Oh, in the middle of the season.
Oh, my God. He quit in the middle of the year?
Yeah. Bo Ryan announced his retirement after a win against Texas A&M Corpus Christi on December 15th. Gard took over. So he did it mid-season.
Yeah. and Bo Ryan, to the comparison, did the exact same thing as somebody on the text line brought up. And he wanted Greg Gard to get a fair shot at the job. He let him finish the season out and wanted them to do it. And I think Tony Bennett is a legendary enough coach at that school in particular, obviously, where if he would have left at the end of the season and said, hey, I want you to give this guy a shot, I think they would have at least honored that request to let him have a shot. Coach K retired at the end of the season.
Yeah.
He wanted John Shire to get a chance at the job, but the timing of it made more sense the way that Coach K did it, evidently differently. I forgot forgot Bo Ryan did it in the middle of the year, but they have 30 days to transfer if they want to, but the players can't go anywhere. If they do, how committed are they to this assistant coach? Yeah, to
everybody else's rosters are solidified.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying that maybe one
really
kid's
tough.
Able to transfer. Someone says he can do whatever he wants. Well, of course, I mean,
sure.
Yes, of course he can. Yes,
and
I can
judge him for doing that.
He can do whatever he wants. I mean, someone says college kids enter the portal all the time. They'll be okay.
Not 20 days before the season.
We've had that happen before. My only thing
but
with that
play.
Argument is, yeah, they don't play, but also that argument is like, I don't know, I still hold the coaches at a little bit higher standard than the 18-year-old kid.
I think the
45-year-old, I don't know how old Tony Bennett is, the 45-year-old head coach making,
way older than that.
I know, but making presumably, what, $3.5 million a year, if not more? I don't know what Tony Bennett made. I expect that coach to be held a little bit higher standard than the 18-year-old kid.
I guess some of this is like the people who say that the problem I have is like, you'd be like, well, kids are into the portal all the time, so the coaches can't do the same. But you're the people who say that are constantly bitching about the kids leaving the portal.
Correct.
So which one is it?
It's the wrong argument.
Can everyone just leave all the time, or is it not a problem? Normally, 99% of the times, a kid who entered the portal have to do it under the normal circumstances.
Well, and now there's a new transfer window as well, where players can only do it in a certain amount of time. Coaches obviously have free reign to do it whenever.
Yeah, I was surprised by the news. It sounds like those in the college basketball world were hearing this rumor for a while, though, that he wanted to get out.
The timing
waited
is so
20 days
crazy,
before the season. Tony Bennett, no longer the head coach at Virginia. Up next, let's talk some Chiefs football here on Cody and Gold, though. Josh Briscoe over at SI on Chiefs will get the lowdown on the injury situation with Juju Smith-Schuster, and how confident is he heading into the Niners matchup Sunday afternoon?